Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Zach Applewhite with Tabletop Business Masterminds. I am once again joined for a part two with Josh Glenn and Lee Wanika from Tabletop Journeys. What's up, guys? How y'all doing?
Hey, Zach, how
Hey,
you
hey.
doing, sir?
Hey, Zach.
Now, we already talked once before, but it's been a while since that. I want to try and get just each of you say hi. Who are you? What do you do? And pass it on to the next person.
Sure. I'll start. I'm Josh. I am from Tabletop Journeys. I handle a lot of the technical heavy lifting for the podcast. I'm also a software developer in my 9 to 5. But yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having us, Zach.
I'm Lee Wanika. I am one of the other co-hosts for Tabletop Journeys. I handle a lot of, but not exclusively, the editing duties. Some of that we'll probably get into in the show because we've had some changes with the way we're set up in the past couple months. So, happy to talk about that. But I love gaming. Just got back from a con. Not a big fan of walks on the beach, but I do enjoy a pina colada. I'm joking. I just do that. So we'll move on. Glenn, take it away.
You sure you're done rambling?
Never.
Hi, I'm Glenn. You'll never guess, but I'm the third co-host of Tabletop Journeys. We do a lot of stuff that overlaps, but a really big focus for me is writing, final editing, and trying to put that polish on what we write by the time all is said and done. But all of us just love creating the content that we put out, and the way that the three of us, once we actually get into our cycles of review, peer review and edits, really help feed each other's ideas, and all of our stuff really meshes well. And that helps. I don't think any one of the three of us could put out the same quality of material without the other two.
I could almost guarantee it. I've been doing some solo projects as Lee Wanika versus as Tabletop Journeys, and I can tell you I'm getting constantly improving my writing, always getting better at it. But there is a level of familiarity, comfort, and security that comes from working with these three gents that I don't have when I'm on my own. We all suffer from a wee bit of imposter syndrome. That's a much harder hill to climb when I'm out there doing it on my own. They have given me the confidence to feel good doing that, and I have been successful when I have. But it does feel a lot better when we're sitting, even if we're in three different places, and we get on a call and we start hashing stuff out and ideas and talking and feeding into each other and looking at what each other are doing. Like, that process is much more enjoyable of a process than the solo stuff that I might do.
I'm
It doesn't mean it's
glad that you
bad,
still found it
but
enjoyable when I put 424 suggestions on one of your most recent documents. So that's
well, that was
yeah.
enjoyable because the next one I did, I only saw like 200, and I'm like, woohoo, half. Then he told me I'd only read half of it. I'm like, okay, but I'm still happy. That's
That's it, exactly.
it.
Awesome.
Compartmentalization is a thing, y'all.
And I love the touch on oh gosh, it's already slipping away from me on that self-doubt, on imposter syndrome. That's the word I'm looking for. Because that's part of the reason the podcast is here, is to remind everyone to have the audacity and to let the market decide how good they are instead of them deciding how good they are, because we're terrible judges of ourselves. So I love that you guys have this camaraderie. You're a great team. That's why you're here today. I want to kind of set the stage. All right. So you guys have had a couple of projects in the past, probably a lot of projects in the past, but specifically with Kickstarter, a couple of projects in the past. The first one was a $500 goal, and you managed to raise about $1,500. That was multiverse subclasses. The one we did, you guys were doing when we were talked last time, was the factions, which was a much bigger goal. You guys went from the $500 funding goal to a $3,000 funding goal, raised 4,000. Since then, you guys just did a little make 100,
Correct.
right? Which I love little ones like that. You guys got 49 backers. You didn't make a big bank, but you probably got in new people. All right.
Yeah,
I
it
know
was
you got
very, very, very lucrative on that front. Just the number of new eyes on our brand.
I've done the same thing with $1 stuff before. And so what I want to talk about today is a lot of what's the difference between the $500 goal, the $3,000 goal. I think you guys are in the fulfillment process of that. How has it changed that aspect of just running things, and you guys are doing things new and different and bigger after that.
Yeah.
And how is that changing promotion? How is that changing process, fulfillment, creation, as you guys are scaling up out of the micro and into something bigger? And then we get to, once we get through that, we'll talk about where it's all going.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's reining it back in. Oof. What are the biggest differences right now going from that 500 to that 3,000? Just in that, like, promotion, fulfillment, getting the reward, all that.
So, gentlemen, if you don't mind, let me hop on here as kind of the one that does a lot of the campaign administration aspect of things. And I'm sure that you guys will have stuff to interject as well. So
yeah, get it.
I think that as in all things, every time we do a Kickstarter, we learn more about how to make the process better. And you're right, the factions campaign was a stretch for us. We looked at what happened with the subclasses Kickstarter. Said, how do we capitalize on that? We figured we had about 100 backers on that, about 150% of goal, or about 300% of goal. Like, okay, so how can we go ahead and increase that? So what are the things we're going to do? We're going to start putting out a physical book instead of just a digital copy. Go ahead and increase the revenue on that front, which also increased costs on the other side too, which is part of what we're learning, is how to kind of balance that. Really, at the end of the day, with the $3,000 Kickstarter, that was a pretty stressful process, I'm not going to lie, because with the $500 Kickstarter, I think we were funded in about 2 or 3 days and then just kind of got to go ride the gravy train, right? Like, we were, every time we got the chance to go ahead and talk about it after that, we were happy. Everything was great because we were already funded. Everything was rolling. With the $3,000 faction Kickstarter, we didn't fund until about 20 days into the process.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it was a while. And those 3 weeks were a little touchy. I won't speak for my co-host, but I know with me, I was definitely kind of like, it was very much forefront on my mind for most of the days, right? As I was watching through here, like, how many backers do we get overnight? How are we doing? How's the social media pushing? We'd also tried some things with our advertising promotion that for a campaign of that size did not work well. I think we would have been much better suited for that size campaign to take the same amount of money that we put into an advertising agency, for lack of a better phrase, and just bought our own Facebook ads, honestly, at the end of the day. Like, if we had put the same amount of money that we paid them into those Facebook ads, I think that they would have been more successful. So, you know, that was one thing that was definitely a lesson that we learned in that process. I think if we'd had a much bigger campaign, maybe this group would have been more successful, but we just didn't have the budget for that. So.
Yeah. Now, you talk about money, so I wanted to talk about what was the difference in money in, money out, as much as you're comfortable talking about.
Sure.
The $500 campaign, a lot of people, I know that the perspective is like, hey, once you're making a $3,000 campaign, a $10,000 campaign, you must be rolling in it, right? Like, you must have real money plus an aftermarket, right? And the reality... Yeah. Need to laugh at the aftermarket. The reality tends to be a little harsher.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, so I wanted to see if that experience was similar for you guys. Yep.
Yeah. If I can, Josh, go ahead. Yeah. I'll grab this one because I would say one of the things we certainly strengthened was our ability to have very frank and critically important conversations, which at times could feel a little raw. There were, with the $500 campaign, there was a lot of that initial one, and we may have mentioned this the last time we were here. There's a lot of, you know, we want to be successful no matter what, but we're very cognizant of, at a certain point, the lower your goal is, the less quality people think would be involved. So, like, finding that happy medium, we tossed around probably two or three different numbers. I think we had everything ranging from 250, 500, 750, or 1,000. And we landed at the 500 after a lot of back and forth and hemming and hawing. I mean, I will say, to be perfectly frank, I was always wanted to go much lower. I wanted the lower ones because I was really scared about that. Again, imposter syndrome. And in retrospect, the guys were right. We probably should have gone higher. I will always think about, and I'm very happy with what we did on that first one. You know, what if we had gone for 1,000? Would we have made 20? Would we have made 2,000? Would we have made 2,500? What's the percentage of people that come to you because I'll back a $1,000 Kickstarter, but 500, they're so small, they'll probably get it anyway, and it's probably not all that.
Yep.
I don't know what that is. I don't know if anybody has that specific answer. There are probably way too many variables to ever have a solid answer, but that is the thing that that content creators, when they're deciding we're ready to press the big red button, that has them in fits. And until you fund, or until you hit that first stretch goal, you'll always be in fits in that. At least you think you will. And then you said, I'll be good. But honestly, by the time we got to the second one, I was constantly thinking about that. So when we set 3,000, that was that same process all over again. We were ranging anywhere from 12, from probably 2,000 to 4,000. And again, trying to find the spot we felt would reflect the quality we want to bring. Certainly fulfill the budget, and I'm sure the other guys will talk about that regarding artwork and some of the other costs that were involved, specifically advertising. That's a cost we didn't really know enough about on the first one. We expected it. We tried some things, didn't work out, but we had to budget in a lot more commissioned art. We had to budget in a much heavier advertising toll, and honestly, our efforts were probably more than what we put into the first one. Our time was certainly more because it's a bigger project. Yeah. But at the end of the day, the costs were significantly higher because of that commissioned art.
And because we
always want to pay fairly. Books. And we have fantastic artists on that project. And advertising had to be more. If you got to make more money, you got to advertise more, which has its own other cost. And you hope you're making the right advertising decisions.
Yeah.
So, you know, ROI due to the advertising was not as strong as it was on the first project, to be honest with you. At least I don't have all the numbers. That's more Josh's gig. But my take on things is the ROI was not as strong as the first project simply because of that. If that advertising done better, I think we would have been just about spot on with every other decision we made.
I think there's definitely an opportunity in the advertising, but the thing that really killed the ROI is going to be the book printing. That's the thing that really, you know, when you look at a $3,000 Kickstarter figure, we're going to wind up having to print 60 hardcovers to fulfill. So that is a significant expense. Now we'll be fine. Like we have made more money than it will cost us to put together this project. And it will probably, if we're being totally frank, it will pay a good portion of basically the podcasting budget for the year from that campaign. But podcasting is not super expensive. and we did not draw a salary from it. So,
yeah.
Right. And that's, we'll also say there is that, like, you guys got 60 books. You're probably going to order more than 60 books, you know, like,
right. Because we'll have some on hand.
I'm going to say, like, they you need to order 100 or something like that. And so there is, we've done this with my wife's books of like, yeah, well, we only needed 200. Let's at least get to 50 because those 50, we can sell those in an aftermarket. And at least with her books, we've successfully done that with author events and then have gone back and had to reorder. So that is one of those things like it's even if you weren't profitable, if there was a path to profit that was clear with the leftover books, I'd still be rooting for you guys. The fact that you guys are able to be in the green and have everything fulfilled is just the bonuses that we should all aim for.
And I mean, honestly, Lee Winika mentioned that he felt like in the end, even though he hesitated to go as high as we did, we felt like we should have maybe gone higher. And maybe if we had gone higher than our 3,000 for this one, we would have pushed even further. But with the advertising budget error isn't the right word, but the way that turned out in terms of ROI, had we gone higher, it might have really bit us in the ass. So I think that our step from 500 to 3,000, as much as we hemmed and hawed about it, was kind of ideal. And going into it, it's not like we're expecting to bring out a big paycheck. At that point, we're 100% just being excited that we could increase the quality of the art, put out a better product, increase our advertising a little bit, maybe keep a little bit to help fund the podcast, as Josh was mentioning. But I mean, we got out of it in terms of what expected ROI as much as was expected to more, I feel. I think it's been really fulfilling and really affirming in terms of imposter syndrome to have our fans help us carry that $3,000 goal plus the stretch goals that we did make. When you first asked the question, what was the biggest difference between the two? My impulse answer, I know that was from a little while ago, but my impulse answer was, the biggest difference is the state of the bloody stumps left of my fingernails. Because it was definitely feeling a little bit more nail bitey as we tried to make it up to that higher level.
Let me take a moment to touch on this, because I think this is something I haven't touched on before, is the inescapable gambler's fallacy. You know, it's kind of like the stock market. It's kind of like a poker table of like, but what if I had held onto this stock longer? What if I had played the next hand? And then you see that the stock goes up and you sold early. You see that the next hand would have been in your favor. You know, and that, and the reverse is also true. You can see like, oh, I overshot myself. Would I have succeeded if I had gone lower and so on like that? And I just want to kind of say that, like, I don't think there's any level of success or failure you reach where that doesn't plague you a little bit.
Yep.
You know, that's just kind of part of the game, that my worry being like, I don't want people to stress so much over that. That's why I usually, especially for beginners, which you guys kind of did naturally, go for the lower end, go for something you feel like you're way more comfortably going to hit. Because if you don't, you know, get 2000 or whatever, if you guys aren't even successful, sorry, my cat says hi. All right. You may not get up into the 10,000 when you only have a $500 funding goal. That's true. But you will have a successful project and you can build up toward that, which you guys manage, as you said, kind of perfectly hit that line and manage to do. You manage to pivot and take your momentum from the 500 that raised 1,500 to come back and more than double that total funding.
Yeah.
All right. With a more, with about a double goal of 3,000, you know,
Kenny Rogers had a career before. Certainly had bunches of songs after, but if you ask most folks, they're going to tell you it's, you got to know when to hold them, you got to know when to fold them. And it's funny that the
gambler,
yeah, absolutely, but it's funny that the gambler never told him the answer to that question. It is a sense in the moment. What I think that song was really about was you have to trust yourself and what you're doing and what you know to make those right decisions. That's always what I got out of that song. And to be honest, in this context, I think that really applies. I don't think I was thinking about it at the time we were doing these things, but I do think that really applies to what we had. I had to trust us. I had to trust Tabletop Journeys. I had to trust our process. I had to trust our patrons. I had to trust our audience. I had to trust the greater TTRPG community, the greater podcast community, to carry the day. And at the end of the day, we're going to work hard. We're going to always put out good products. That's what we strive to do. That's what we're very capable of, and we continue to do. But at the end of the day, it's still up to all those uncontrollable factors. And you just have to trust in that process and trust that you can make the right decisions. Not always easy. Sometimes you get it wrong, but you got to get up and keep going.
Yeah. So, and I know I interrupted. We were talking a little, so I'm going to switch back now. We were talking a little bit about money. All right. And so go ahead. I think it was Glenn who was talking. And I'm sorry, the cat is on my notes. Josh.
So,
was talking. I also, you guys did a Make 100 completely goal, which gets you new backers. Some of them have never seen you before. I'm sure some of them are just happy to be there and buy more of your stuff. And it's all digital, so it's also all profit.
So the Make 100 is not all digital, actually. The Make 100 does have a physical component. And here's the secret behind the Make 100 campaign. So take this one, because the Make 100 was just kind of like a pet project that I wanted to go ahead and write. Like, that was literally like, I was like, you know what? I have this idea for this book, booklet. It's going to be like 35 pages or whatever like that by the time it's said and done. And I was like, I have this idea. I don't want it to be a really big thing. I don't want to have like all the bells and whistles that we do with all like our big Kickstarter campaigns. I just want to do like a little teeny tiny one. And honestly, at the end of the day, the idea for it was really born from when we went to a Catacon. We went to a convention out in Ohio last fall. And we were just kind of like thinking after the fact, like, man, you know what would have been great is if we'd been here, if we had books that we could hand out to people, if we had books that we could sell here, that kind of thing. But we don't have any stock on hand because, for one, we just kickstarted our first major thing, and we wouldn't want to give out a 180-page book anyway. Like, we'd want to, you know, want something a little bit smaller, a little bit more flexible. So I started thinking about this idea, and like this, the whole Make 100 campaign was it's a book of 100 divine based magic items. Is basically at the end of the day what it is, right? And the entire point of that campaign was to make enough money to do a really big print run so that we could send books to people that back it and have a bunch of books left over that I could go ahead and give to Lewinika and say, you know, Lewinika, when you go to whatever con, you know, bring some of these with you and throw them at people and see if they're interested. You know, throw them at retailers to go ahead and have a sample of our work, see if they want to go ahead and back on the bigger book campaign, see if they want to buy like lots of books, stuff like that. That was entirely the point. And so it was a small goal. It was only a $250 campaign. Or no, excuse me, it was a $100 campaign and raised about $275, which, you know, again, for a 35-page book for printing costs and everything, we're going to have a big stack of books when we're done after fulfillment and everything. And so that was really kind of the entire purpose behind the campaign. Small campaign, agile campaign, and just do it that way. So
I just want to comment.
Yeah.
I'm gonna break down what you just said.
Sure. Yeah.
So what you told me was you use Kickstarter to fund promotional materials.
Yeah.
It's selling the all digital version. You then take that, you've cut out shipping, no cost to you other than your labor. You're then taking that money and you're printing everything out. And now, like, I go to Origins Game Fair, and they have Dungeon Masters running stuff all the time. So you could just go in when you know on the schedule their games are ending or about to start. Go in, chat them up, and say, hey, I just love giving this out to free Dungeon Masters. Yeah. This is who I am. Yeah. You can just start giving those to micro-influencers.
Yep.
All right. All paid for by doing something that grew your audience,
yeah,
put you completely in the green, and was just another successful campaign.
I think that there were 50 backers on it. Probably about 15 of those were returned.
Literally 49 backers. Original.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm stealing that.
Please. Yep. Absolutely. Like that's, steal it because it worked, Zach. I have plenty of really shit ideas. So don't don't steal those.
Zach, to be fair, when Josh suggested it, the reason why I was immediately on board, in addition to I just want to see the items that are come out of it, because it rolled in my head like all the places we can go. But in addition to the content part of it, what in the back of my head was that thing, and I think I mentioned it last time we were here, and I know I've mentioned it to you when we've chatted on Twitter or other places, but is the smaller Kickstarters, those micro Kickstarters, and what they can do for you. So when Josh was first approaching the idea and saying, hey, you know, this could be a really good promotional thing for us to be part of Make 100, I got an idea that would work for that. Then I'm like, how can we spin this to maximum advantage? If it was just good content and the promotional capabilities of Kickstarter, that would have been enough to be cool. Right. It's the other things that takes it way up that, like, put level, if I dare say so, makes it legendary.
Very nicely, Winnika.
Very nice.
Thank you. I'll be here all night. But I mean, that was really what I grabbed onto, and then we started really talking about how we can leverage that for other things, because we have stores that have purchased our big project at this point.
Yeah.
So we have retailers that are buying Tabletop Journeys.
Love that.
Retailers, if they sell through, only want more.
Right.
And something small and agile that we have on hand that we can get to them quickly in the interim while we build up enough to get a print run on the big book ain't wrong.
Right. Something small that we can send to like stores for like Free RPG Day.
Yeah. Yep. Keeps you top of mind. It's something that if they wanted to give away, they could. It's something that keeps your shelf space on lock. You know, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So I'm 100% stealing this tag. I'm officially, this is just a baller tag.
Okay. I love it.
All right. Have at it. Yeah. If you're willing to do the after work, the networking, you know, effect of everything. Yeah. Now, we've kind of gone through your whole journey up to this point. All right. I know you guys have a lot of different things kind of cooking right now. Walk me through them. What are you excited about?
So I think that there are, and Luminic, I don't, are you back yet? Or are you still, he's still working. All right. So I'll talk while he's silent. Two things right now. So for one, we kind of went, kind of totally off script, I think, for us. And we have, of course, another kind of micro campaign running right now on Crowdfunder. Wanted to go ahead and try another platform. We'll get to that in a second. But we have the Traveler's Guide to Flora and Fauna, Volume 1, for Zine Quest for this month, running right now, actually, as we speak, over on Crowdfunder. And I'll make sure and drop you the link for that. And the other thing is a project that I'm assuming that we can go ahead and talk about, the project that we've been talking about for August.
Yes.
Maybe not all the details, right? Is that?
I don't think we have very many details yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean specifically. So in August, last couple of years, to celebrate the release of the latest Dragonlance novels, we have put out content in August to celebrate that. Last year was another collection of subclasses that specifically went along with Dragonlance, and then so this year we are already in talks about another smaller campaign, smaller book that will be on DM's Guild to celebrate the release of the third of the Dragonlance novels coming out. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So the Crowdfunder.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so many questions. I guess it's like, why Crowdfunder? Why not something that was already successful on Kickstarter before? I personally, I've kind of played with that. I think I went to Indiegogo, took a successful campaign, started building it out, ended up hating the platform and dropping it.
Yeah.
It's
actually a really interesting idea. I hadn't thought about re-crowdfunding something that we've already done.
If this works or not, is there a plan to take it to Kickstarter? Because you are doing something completely new for Crowdfunder. So just walk me through, how's it going? What brought you there? What are you thinking?
I think I can take this one. So originally the idea came from just things I've been playtesting using in my homebrew games. I closed the campaign after about 8 years. So much of what's in this new project, Flora and Fauna, has been playtested pretty thoroughly at my own table. It does need a little bit of more wider playtesting and look. But in general, it is something I've been using and the ideas I've been using in other projects we've done. So this is something I've been looking forward to for a while. Crowdfunder was, again, a decision we made to kind of branch out, see what works. Josh and I attended a seminar. We learned a lot of things about it. Many of them sounded good, but we were both of a, let's check it out. Let's not put our big book in that basket until we see kind of what works. And so we decided a smaller project might work. And Flora and Fauna is one of those types of things. I'm not opposed success or, you know, if it's not successful on that platform, to look elsewhere. We would, of course, have to look at why. Was it we didn't do the right marketing? Was it the platform didn't do what they said they would do for this thing? We are kind of like Make 100 was part of a thing. This is also part of a thing. You know, clearly Make 100, I know because I back other Kickstarters, pushed a lot of information on Make 100 to me through my channels that are not tied to Tabletop Journeys. So I know they were doing the back of the house promotion promised by the event. As of yet, I have not seen as much from Crowdfunder. So that is something we'll be looking at. We have to evaluate, kind of like we evaluated an advertising agency.
Yep.
This is how much money we put in. This is what they promised we would get out. Where did we end up? And is there anything that we did that altered that result or could have altered that result? Because if we can do more and it would have worked, then that's on us. If we did something to make it worse, that's on us. We have to evaluate that. If right. it's we did all the right things at all the right times and it and we didn't get out what we were promised, then we have to say, well, maybe that's just not the platform for us. Doesn't mean that's a bad platform. And I don't think it is. I actually feel very strongly that it's a good platform and they have a couple things that we still really, really like. But is that the place we want to do crowdfund our content projects? That's really the question. There are other things that Crowdfunder does that Kickstarter does not.
Yeah.
And for those things, I think Crowdfunder may still be a good answer. What we were trying to test out is, can Crowdfunder do all of the things or just those things? And so I think that's kind of what we're evaluating. And here we are just shy of a week in, and we're starting to formulate opinions, but there's still time to go. It was an odd week when we launched. We had to launch because of the event, even though it took a third of us out of the game from a yep. marketing and media standpoint, because I was at a convention yep. from Thursday until Sunday.
You were at a convention. It was the day after I moved. Like it yeah. was like there was some maybe yeah. we should have rethought when we launched that.
Yeah.
So I think mean, that again goes to your point too about are there some things that we could have done better with the Crowdfunder campaign? You know, all that to go ahead and say though, I think I am in almost total agreement with everything that you just said. So
yeah.
So very interesting. And I'm looking at Crowdfunder right now. It's one that I've definitely had an ear on, but not an eye on.
Yeah.
You know? And so one of the things, go ahead and talk me through what is it that you think you've heard about Crowdfunder, you've seen in Crowdfunder that you really like?
So the flexibility.
The flexibility and features, that's what drew my eye. Josh actually heard about it first. I mean, I knew of its existence. Josh is like, hey, Crowdfunder's doing a seminar. They're trying to get new business, and they have some things coming up specifically in February for tabletop games, right? We're part of a tabletop games promotion thing, right? And so I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, we should go to this seminar. So I kind of like flipped around a couple things. Some weird night in the middle of the week, we went in, we were on Discord, and we listened to people from Crowdfunder talk to a pretty large crowd, take a lot of pointed questions. And I left that, I won't speak for Josh, but I left that feeling, this has the potential to be very good, but there's a lot I'm going to have to see. And the biggest thing for me was specific features that don't exist in Kickstarter. The biggest feature, number one, is there is a way to set up your Crowdfunder campaign so that it is just like Kickstarter. It's all or nothing. Or you can set it up so it's, at the end of the time frame, whatever you have is what you can go with.
Gotcha.
So that's feature one. Yep. Feature two is they basically have and this may not be the exact way to describe it, but it's how it works in my head. Effectively a storefront that's evergreen, very similar to what BackerKit does. But mm-hmm. with that, that allows you to kind of park all your projects there after they've gone through this process. And that would be the link you send people to. So it's not crowdfund this. We don't have to build a website. We don't have to collect taxes. We don't have to do any of that. It's kind of this one house setup. And that is very attractive. That because, again, we're talking costs. And we are at the point where a company, we may not be drawing salaries, but at some point we may. But our ability to ever eventually do that will be based on cost. Accounting is a cost. Mm-hmm. Time is a cost. So if there's a feature that reduces that time and reduces that paperwork burden, that might be worth it if we can make everything work out. And then the last feature, I think, was pretty much a combination of that. It's like, it just seems like there's some things that they do better. What we really need to find out is how good are they at the promotion they promise?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they also promise a lot of assistance and seminars and help. Josh had a couple situations where he got some help, so I'll let him talk about response times and all that. But, you know, are they fulfilling their stated goals and promises? And I think those are some of the big questions. You know, is it going to be what we use for the biggest of our projects? Those are questions that are
possibly months, years down the road. But I haven't seen anything that tells me absolutely no. I just haven't seen anything that says stop everything else. We've done our last Kickstarter. Everything's now on Crowdfunder.
Yeah.
I'm not at that point yet. Who knows if that point ever comes? But at the very least, they haven't told us no.
Right.
Nothing has told me no.
Right. Yeah, I think that. Yeah, again, I think I agree. I think that they are. I think that their crowdfunding platform from a design of a how to build a campaign is way better than Kickstarter's. Let's be honest. Unfortunately, Crowdfunder is not Kickstarter, and I think that that is primarily where the challenge comes in, is that
brand recognition.
Getting people to go there is tough.
Yep.
So,
yeah,
they're still trying to build that community that's gonna leverage and be built in and be actionable, you know. And but that doesn't mean they can't get there. You know, the crowdfunding market, and there's, you know, they're continuing to specialize. They're continuing to find new ideas. I think that the whole, you know, it's either all or nothing or it's not. It's very interesting, especially for something like a digital. All right. Yeah. Where you don't actually need the $100. You've already made this stuff. The $100 isn't going to buy you more megabytes, you know. But it can be used as a stretch goal. So you need a goal to in order to set to have stretch goals. So that's why it makes sense to have a goal. But it doesn't make sense that if you set a $100 goal and you get $99, why you didn't need that extra dollar.
Yeah.
Versus hardware campaigns where, like, if you say you need a $20,000 to make an app, you definitely need that money. You know, having half that money doesn't make a whole app.
Yeah. The other thing that's really nice about Crowdfunder's platform too is, again, when we get to the customization. So not only can it do the kind of Kickstarter model, all or nothing, not only can it do it, keep it all, where it's like, we're going to run for 10 days and however much money we run in those 10 days, we're going to keep. It can also go the other way around with that too, where you can remove the end date and say, I'm going to run until I get $250. So you talk about funding a print run, right? So if you know that, you know, if I get $250, then I can go ahead and buy 25 books. So if I can get, you know, if I can sell them for $10 a piece and I get my $250, then I go ahead and fund my thing, right? It doesn't matter if I get it a week from now or a month from now, but I can fund that print run by doing it this way. That's kind of the other place. So that when we talk about the flexibility of the platform, that's really what we're talking about, is you can really design the campaign for exactly the way you want that particular campaign to run. And I agree with Lee Winnick about the storefront. That's a really attractive feature to us too.
I will.
Was one other feature, and Josh reminded me of it when he mentioned the print run bit. Not every project has to, or it has the expectation that there are going to be assets, digital or otherwise, that go with it. In a very similar fashion to GoFundMe, you can set up crowdfunders to just support your business or project. So, for example, we're a podcast. We do certain things. We do an actual play, what have you. There's a potential for once we know once we feel we have the proper amount of audience and eyes on our stuff through that platform, we could say fund a project to get higher quality cameras or higher quality mics. And it has nothing to do with the product that somebody's going to get necessarily. We could certainly offer those things if we chose to, but it isn't we're building a widget. And if you back us now, you get a cheaper widget than when we finally build a widget and it goes to the store for the cost of widget plus store money, right? This can just be, hey, if you like Tabletop Journeys, we're trying to do this big thing. You know, we don't necessarily, you know, it'd be great if you were a Patreon and were just helping us out and supporting us and being effectively helping to produce the show in an ongoing fashion. But, you know, maybe it's you only listen to one part of the show and we're doing a project for that one part of the show. And you're like, you know what? I want to help that part of the show. It would provide the flexibility to be able to do that in that way. And obviously Kickstarter doesn't do that. So it does have some very appealing pieces, which makes it worth, even if a project may not do as great as we'd like, working out all the kinks and working out all the bells and whistles.
Now I have a question. Do you know if you can run multiple crowdfunder campaigns at the same time, because the idea that I'm having, I see you nodding your head yes, so I'm going to take that as a yes. The idea is that it sounds very similar to how if you have a wedding or you have a baby, there are platforms that you can do to say, hey, instead of just buying us gifts, instead of picking off an Amazon wish list, or God forbid, you go and you find something that you think we'll like, but we actually don't, you know, you can decide where the money goes. You can pay for our honeymoon. You can pay for the baby's first crib. You can, like, you take the bigger expenses. So the idea being is that, like, if you guys wanted all kinds of different equipment, you can have one running for just a better camera, just a better mic, just a better editing software. And like you said, let the dates run out and say, hey, yeah, those are always there. I will, before I let you guys, you know, talk more on it, I do think it's interesting. My biggest worry, and this isn't you have to sell me, this is just kind of making sure that, like, all sides are heard. Yeah. My biggest worry is actually, I'll say that I like a time limit. Okay.
Yeah.
I like, it gives you a sense of urgency for both the backer and the creator. It also gives you an end, because personally, one of the things, like, I haven't done big aftermarket stuff like Patreon because I hate the minutia of constant promotion.
Yeah.
No, I prefer the project model for a reason. And so personally, I don't think I would use that element of crowdfunder, because if it's going to fail, I want it to fail faster.
Sure.
So move on. And it's not part of, like, taking up that time, that soul weighing me down. That's the kind of stuff that, like, a non-success, non-failure is going to eat at me way more than it reasonably should. But, you know, that's part of the flexibility. You get to choose that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there are, as creators, we're always feeding multiple different wolves. Our desire to be in and at it all the time, our desire to be able to be away from it some of the time. And so you got to be able to navigate that. I think this is as good a time as any to mention, you know, for the longest time, Tabletop Journeys has been just the three of us with a lot of help on writing projects from Glenn's wife as another part of our editing team. She's always been there and always been doing that. And I absolutely want to give a real big shout out to Trish for help making us what we are today and keeping
sounds
us
like
going.
We know how to speak English. That's really what she does.
I mean, because we're terrible. But, you know, along the lines of doing a lot of these written projects, that changes what we do and how we do it, because we drop two episodes a week. That is a lot of time in coming up with the right stuff to do, planning, scheduling with other creators, the actual recording time, and Lord have mercy, the editing time and the audio processing time and all of those pieces and parts, right? And if we are going to be doing a lot more written word projects, which we are, that puts a real heavy burden on Glenn as well for the parts that he handles on the finishing and the parts that he's writing as well. That's kind of why, and if anybody's wondering, Josh and I talked about these two micro funds a little bit more than Glenn chimed in on them. And that's because Josh is the primary, effectively sole writer on the Make 100 piece. I'm effectively primary slash sole writer, lead writer at the very least, on Flora and Fauna. But both of those projects, once they get to draft completion, go to Glenn. So Glenn will be a major part of all of that. Trish will be a major part of all of that.
Yeah. Which reminds me, Glenn, you know, you're going to be getting these when we're done. So that's, I don't know who told him that yet.
I'm going to be honest. No, neither of you had told me this yet, but I had already realized that I was going to need to work this into final edits and polish writing around our current Kickstarter and the potential side project that I'm thinking about.
You know, but this really allows us to kind of, so along those lines, one of the things that we've done is we've increased the behind the screens team here at Tabletop Journeys. We haven't really even announced it on our show just yet. We're kind of getting all that together, but we've brought in some a pair of folks that have been friends and supporters for many, many years, and friends in one case as well as a friend and supporter since we first started this podcast, in the other case, to help us on the editing front. One of those is going to help us drive to a higher level of content that we put out as far as the podcast and YouTube and other platforms. That would be David Herrera at Bowtie Studios. He's been working with the team for most of the last month and a half at this point, and kind of lining us up and as we get ready to move forward and setting up projects for 2025. And we have Marty Napier, who has come on, who's also helping us on the editing front for the audio pieces of the podcast, as well as working on some back of the house projects to really improve the quality of our Patreon games. So we are providing even bigger and better benefit for our Patreons. So, you know, we've done that. One, so we're better at all the things we currently do, and two, free up time to be able to do more of the other projects that we really want to get into. So Flora and Fauna is not just a one and done. The plan is for that to be a recurring thing, because I've got tons of ideas that have collected over 40 years of gaming that need to be dusted off, polished up, and put out in, you know, playtested new form and all that. So that's just the first in a line. That's why it's volume one. You know, so we can kind of get into that.
Just keep in mind, as you start throwing out, you know, these volumes of Flora and Fauna, that at some point we're probably going to put together a full setting of some form, and we might need to be able to fill the bestiary and, you know, environment too.
I mean, it's almost like we're doing all the writing ahead of time, so that when we go ahead and go to do this, we'll already have a monster manual done. Like, that's
One might think.
One of the beauties of like the micro Kickstarter is that you can get a whole project done a little bit at a time.
Absolutely.
You know, we've done that with Thuragarth. We built out like, oh, here's a location, here's a location, here's a location. And finally we're starting to feel like, okay, now let's put this all together in a book. All right. Yep. And we can add a bunch more and sell it as a bigger book. I want to wrap up on the crowdfunding thing. I just wanted to kind of say that, like, one, kudos for testing. That is something that people get a lot of fear about, or they get stuck in a rut. Both of them are completely normal and natural, but by testing and giving yourself an opportunity to fail, also giving you an opportunity to succeed, to learn something new, to try something new, and grow from that. I just want to give you guys kudos on that. I highly recommend it. Everyone test it. I also wanted to kind of just flesh out some of the thoughts on why not Kickstarter. I love Kickstarter, but if Elon Musk has taught me anything, it's not to put all my eggs in one basket, because a rich guy might come over and screw everything up. You know? And so that's one reason why
it could go the way of Twitter. That is a true story.
I love Kickstarter. All right. And I think the CEO in charge right now is actually really, really good. All right. He's done a lot in a very short amount of time. But that doesn't stop it from just possibly getting bought out by some guy on Wall Street and completely ruining the platform I built for myself. So A, it's okay to branch out, try new things, and have eggs in a different basket somewhere else. B, there's a market there. Like, the people you reach on Kickstarter versus the people you reach on Crowdfunder, there's going to be some crossover. There's also a completely new audience potentially.
Sure.
You know? So that's why I have considered in the future trying to put our same material out there on different platforms. It also, Kickstarter is very stingy about how many Kickstarters you can run.
Yep.
You know, while something hasn't been fulfilled or running at the same time, running on other platforms, production doesn't work like that. Production doesn't wait for you to finish completely everything for one Kickstarter. You might have other products ready to launch.
Yeah.
You know,
I was actually surprised that they let us run the Make 100 campaign, because it was so close on the heels of the Factions book. And we are admittedly, you know, in our editorial process for the Factions book. Like, that book is not done yet. It's not going to be done for another few months now. So, you know,
I think it helped you that it was a digital, like, fully campaign.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah. It sometimes is weird what Kickstarter will let through. It's also not always a person at the end of that. Sometimes it's an algorithm. So it's really hard to nail that down.
Yep.
But
a large part of it really could have come from the fact that we're playing into their promotional Make 100.
That's fair, too.
As well.
Yeah.
Yep.
As well.
Yeah. That might have been just if it's for Make 100, let them do it. Because by definition, it's not terribly big. Right. So.
And that's their own promotion, so they need to fill it with content.
Yep. Right. Yep. So I wanted to say all that, and then I wanted to pivot because Lee Winnica kind of started to touch on this. So I want to take this opportunity. You guys have been doing this for a while, and you have big plans to kind of lay out the back end of, like, what is it you're building to? All right, you've taken micro steps. You've taken bigger steps. You're testing all kinds of things. What is the 5-year, 10-year, like, how far do you see in the future, and what are you aiming for? And what's the plan there?
So, Josh, you want to take the 5-year? I'll grab the 10, and Glenn, you can kind of fill in all the everything in between. Sure. That sound like a good plan?
I mean, world domination, is that a 5 or a 10? Is that...
The same thing we plan to do every evening, Pinky.
$1 million.
I mean, so I don't know that we have an explicit 5 or 10 year business plan on file. However, my hope, and I hope that these guys come with me, is that we want to just keep doing bigger and better projects and eventually get it to the point that, you know, I think of companies like Lorecraft and things like that, right? Like, small, really tight shop, put out really good quality stuff, right? And was turning around content quite frequently, right? So, like, you know, I would love to be getting to the point that we're doing 500 backer Kickstarters in the next year or so. I would love to be getting to the point that, you know, we're doing $10,000 and $20,000 Kickstarters, stuff like that, and actually being able to go ahead and start to see some solid revenue coming in so that we can go ahead and engage better artists, that we can engage better processes, that we can go ahead and draw salaries ourselves, you know, stuff like that. I mean, this is, you know, what we always said about the podcast is that the podcast just crossed its 3-year. It's been like 3.5 years at this point almost. Right. And it's like, you know, it is a labor of love, and the emphasis is on the word labor. Like, this is, you know, it is a lot of work to put this stuff together, and we do it because we love it. And it would also be really nice to go ahead and, you know, make these products a little bit better, right? More custom art. Like, right now we do a little bit of custom art and a lot of stock art. We'd really love to go ahead and flip that around, you know, yeah. All those sorts of things. Like, these are all the kind of things that we want to do in the next 5 years. And really, at the end of the day, what it's going to take to make that happen is revenue. You know, it just needs revenue. Like, you know, we put as much cash as we could out up front before this Factions Kickstarter, like literally in between pre-campaign marketing and art, put as much cash as we could scrounge to go ahead and do that, you know, it in the grand scheme of things, it was not a ton, but it was everything that we had, you know what I mean? Boy, we're really, really glad that it funded, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah, there are parts of that you can't get back, and I think that's something that casual Kickstarter backers don't get. Yeah. And even casual Kickstarter creators may not get as much, depending on the scope of what they're doing. Those of us who've been in it for a while or in it deep do get it. I mean, you can't advertise in advance without advance money. So something has to seed money to get you going. If you want a faster or sufficient turnaround time, you might be able to say, my book is already written, I'm just looking for print money or for art for it. You could go that route. But then your page, your Kickstarter campaign, and that little mini video that you have show nothing from your book because you haven't got it, unless you're actually an artist and do that yourself, or you have taken money out of your own back pocket to get at least pieces and parts of that in advance. You know, anybody who looks at our Kickstarter page for the Factions, they see an amazing image that Josh found for what's at the header of that page. That is not our cover. Our cover is hands down freaking amazing. And it is not that. If you scroll down on that page and see the t-shirts, or if you go to our backer kit page for pre-orders, you'll see the actual cover. That cover is probably like, if I just walked through my game store recently. With the exception of possibly some foil cover things, I don't think there's a better cover on a hardcover book that's come out in the last year and a half to 2 years in my local game store, period. I own that. And I will say that
visually seeing it, like as I did, I scrolled that. And I've played a very similar game with you. It's bright orange coloring. Okay. It's got that sword coming down with bright orange and the flags and the factions. Honestly, the color alone, nobody's doing that with TTRPG covers. They're all going for this dark tone, almost like DC Comics live action kind of movie feel, where they're all going that kind of gritty-ish, only one level above Cthulhu kind of color tone. You guys are coming in, keeping the grit, but going with this sunset city on fire coloring.
Yeah.
You know.
So I'm a fan of four color comics. We've talked about it with the guys from Everyday Heroes and whatnot. I'm a fan of four color comics. I think color is emotive. I think color shows so much. And I'm not the artist. You know, we gave some ideas and the artist kind of read what we had. He was actually all read. They were actually already an artist in our book. They had been commissioned for other parts of the book. Asked us for the opportunity to do our cover. So they had read the pieces that they're going to do, had seen the other things that were in the book. Then they did this painting. I got to tell you, many, many levels of extreme higher degree, like as the artist, actually as all of our artists, we gave them notes and they turned in their pieces and we're like, yes, like that is awesome. And a little bit more, every piece was so you'd almost thought we saw the piece before we wrote the material. That's how good the art, the commissioned art pieces are. And then when you look at that cover and you see it, and then you kind of factor in the nature and demeanor of each of our factions, not that we did it in a World of Darkness manner, but those words are what we're talking about. When you look at what those factions are and do, they are all in some aspect encapsulated within that photo. And within that cover, every one of nine separate and unique factions, you can see all of them in there. I see every single one in there. I could hand point where each one would kind of be and fit. And it might be different than other people because art is subjective, but that's a level of evocation that does not exist on most D&D covers. It's either eight heroes in the Justice League V pose, or it's we're climbing up a mountain, we're climbing down a mountain, we're looking into a valley, we're doing whatever. And those can be very beautiful. I'm not saying they're not, but we really wanted something that stirred the soul, and it stood out.
Even Tasha's Cauldron, which had a very unique cover for anything like D&D has done, it was still muted. You know. So we did something very similar. We hired an amazing artist. Her name was Maria Demova to do Kalen's cover. And that got people, we put it on this big banner that I think only cost us $85 on Canva. All right, we were able to get it on this big 6-foot-tall banner, and people will come across the room to see what that book is about, because it stands out. Because, believe it or not, people do judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
And it won't always, it's not always going to sell the book, but it sells them on the idea at the very beginning to come over and ask what it's about and open it up. And then the materials inside will close the deal. You know, or the person behind the booth, you know, we'll close the deal. I interrupted you and started fangirling over your art.
So, no, please do.
We were talking, Josh was going over the 5-year. And I think you were going to go over the kind of broader 10-year, which is, of course, foggier. And as I said, you know, off camera, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. We understand it's probably more conceptual, and the direction and the target and the pathway there is going to change. But go ahead and give us what are you thinking?
Yeah, so at Tabletop Journeys, we always refer to stuff in the when we're talking about these things as future state. So our future state, similar to a 10-year plan, and actually what Josh has mentioned for the 5-year plan is very much future state as well. But when we talk that mid to long range future state, is that we are producing content in the Tabletop Journeys brand that is kind of noticeable, right? That people will say, Yeah, I really like Tabletop Journey stuff. Their supplements really enhance my game. They really help make my game, you know, I'm going to do it again, legendary. You know, that like we want to do those types of things, but we do have future state plans for a campaign setting. And that's actually the main reason why we stopped producing on DM's Guild and started with Kickstarter in the first place, because we realized we had some great stuff in that first book. And it was amazing stuff, the first two projects we did, right? But we're locked on DM's Guild. We're
locked on DM's Guild on this podcast before. We're not like I don't hate them, but I'm not their friend either. Okay. Very restrictive.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'll say this, and I love drive through. There are a lot of things I do pick up and purchase through there. I love supporting smaller creators and really good creative people through there as a content creator, who at some point we can get to the point where we might be employing additional writers. We are employing artists, being fluent with those two channels and the names that are making hay over there. Has a lot of merit. You know, we talked last time about, you know, there's a decision to have a specific art direction here. You know, and while that kind of, depending on the phase of the project, could be any one of the three of us, you can't do that if you don't know who the artists are. You can't decide what style you want to, you know, unless, again, you're an artist doing the drawings, unless you're the one creating that stuff, you have to go out and see the other visuals. So, you know, every year we kind of do at least a small DM's Guild project, and mostly because it's IP that we can't do elsewhere anyway. Right. But we are very cautious and cognizant about, we don't do extra rule sets there. We don't put in extra effort
that you're not going to get the extra pay for.
Yeah.
Those are very focused things that got us to this point. And when we look at that future state plan, it's, what is a world where TTJ can have its own campaign setting? What does it look like when we can produce adventure modules or mini campaigns? And what does that frequency look like? You know, the questions that we are answering as we go, or how are we going to be able to vet artists to ensure our sensibilities and morality are properly displayed, and so we can go to market with confidence in what we are putting on shelves. And my personal bit in the current state and the future state is to really stop us to retail stores. It's getting to more conventions, running more games, so people see, hey, you know, like this weekend I had a bunch of people, I really love the way you did that. I did a very strong collaborative world building piece in one of the five sessions I ran this weekend, and people were like really blown away and they really dug into that. And and our future state looks like making that our homework with the things we do, so people recognize that's where I go to get that. People go to Fate for what Fate does. People go to Blades in the Dark for what Blades of the Dark does. They go to Monster of the Week for what Monsters of the Week does. You know, these games and these alternate systems beyond WotC and 5e are there for reasons, and they're all good. It's people go to them for that reason. So we want to get to a point where we are one of those reasons people look for a thing. It would be great when we have to have the discussion about, somebody has to say, I got this idea and cite Tabletop Journeys. You know, that is the future state goal. When somebody says this and there's a discussion about, did they ask to be able to do that? Can they legally do that? I don't want people to steal from me. That doesn't mean go steal from us anyway. But I got to say, there is a certain amount of, have we arrived? So I think that's that future state you speak of.
I love it. So here's the deal. We're going to start wrapping up. There's a lot I'd love to keep talking with you guys. You know, we could go for days. We might have to have a part three where we talk about like collaboration, because I know that you guys are hitting that. I'm hitting that on my end as well. I'm starting to get to that next phase. There's a ton of other things we could talk about, the aftermarket more and so on. But if I want to give you guys an opportunity that if you want to leave here putting one last thing on the table, whether that's promoting something or an idea or a feeling you want to share, now's your moment.
Glenn, you want to start us out?
Sure. I'd say if like there was a takeaway overall for what we've been talking about tonight, from where we started to where we've gone to where we hope to go, it would be, honestly, all of us can do it. You just need to keep working on finding your niche and keep working on finding the things that work for you and partner with good people. Make good decisions in terms of, you know, like where you're going to put your stuff up for platforms and take the time to research and decide for yourself where you want to go. You know, you don't have to just stick with Kickstarter because that's what everybody does. Look into the other options that are out there. Kickstarter may be the main one, but that doesn't mean you can't nest a few together and come up with a way to, the next thing you know, you've got two potential future content states being paid for by Crowdfunder and Kickstarter and small booklets that you can put out as, you know, to spread your brand. So diversify and stay focused. You can get there.
Absolutely. Josh?
I just want to say to folks out there listening that that if you enjoyed this conversation and the way that we talk, by all, you know, please check out the show. This is very much what our show sounds like when we're talking to each other, is riffing ideas off each other's, and the three of us are better because the three of us work together. So you know, we hope that you get the chance to go ahead and check out the show.
I will simply echo everything my co-hosts have said. Have confidence in yourself. You'll get there. Keep doing what you do, and you will get there. Surround yourself with good people. I called Josh this evening because I was listening to our actual play, and the whole purpose of that call, and my plan was to mention this to you as well, Glenn, was to simply say, we surrounded ourselves with amazing people. I kind of talked about the real life work that the various cast members are, and you know, and in a bit of self-deprecation, I said, you know, I'm the one without a college education or what have you, but you know, we have a person in the PhD program. We have a person with many, many years, similar to Josh's background in IT and technical security aspects, but I mean at a super high level.
Yeah, we way have, better than what I did.
Yeah, we have an individual who is an engineer, and all the pieces and parts of that. You know, Sheldon can pick up.
And he plays one on the show.
Yeah, and he plays one on the show, so no wonder why he gets everything fixed on the Llamas Christian. You know, and we have and we have somebody else who just works with the, you know, the public and housing issues and doing, you know, really, really good work to keep people housed and safe in a government environment that doesn't always do that well, and managing all of that and still take the time to come hang out with us. That's amazing. And I had commented that, you know, it is hard in 2024 to be surrounded by good people. Everything about life pulls us apart, shelters us from other people, keeps us away from the things that are positive in this world, forces the things that are negative on us, and presents that as the only way the world works. So I had called Josh, and I was waiting for this meeting because sometimes it's hard to get hold of Glenn during the day, but to say that I am so grateful for what we've done over the past 3.5-4 years, because it has allowed me to be surrounded by a pocket of positivity and elevation that would not exist in my life outside of it. So I hope some part of what I feel with what we do on a day-to-day basis is what comes through in our work and allows people to build their game tables and fill them with people who do the same for them. That's kind of my overall goal in the universe. That's the kind of positivity I want to put out there. I'm not a doctor. I don't even play one on Star Trek yet. But what I can do is just be a good person. I say hi to people in the grocery store. You know, I open doors for strangers, and I will stop and chat simply because that's what I want to do. I want to make the world a better place. And this is a weird way to do it, but it's the way I happen to be good at for the time being. So I'm going to keep doing it.
All right. I can't top that. So we're just going to end on that. All right. All the links will be in the show notes. Thank you all for being here and have a great night, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Good night, all.
Night, all. Thanks, Zach, for having us.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Zach.